There was this king and his trusted servant. And the servant was an excellent worker. The king loved him. Anything that had to be done, he did it right away. Many times he did it even before he was asked. He was a lovely servant. There was only one thing about this servant that the king could not stand. After anything happened, he used to say, "Gam zu l'tova." This is also for the good. This is for the best. Like, "Nachum ish gam zu." And that really bothered him. But okay, but he was able, he was willing to put up with it because he was such a good servant. And they're going on this hunting trip, and the servant prepares the king's rifle. He went gun shooting, and he took out his gun, and he shot, and apparently the bullets weren't put in properly, and he blew his thumb off. And he was steaming, a lot of pain, and the trusted servant said, "Gamzu etova, don't worry, it's for the best." And he was furious, steaming. And he just threw him into the dungeon. This goes, and after a while, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, people forgot about the servant. He's stuck in the hole, like an Alcatraz. And a couple of years later, he goes on a hunting trip again, and he's captured by cannibals. Oh, they see a king, a nice 300-pound guy, a lot of flesh and fat. It's going to be a tremendous meal for them. They cook up the hot water. They put him on top. And, of course, like any korban, any sacrifice, you got to do a bedika. You search first. And they found he was missing a thumb. They said, "Oh, we're not going to eat you." And they threw him away. And then afterwards, he realized, wow, what about that guy in the dungeon? He saved my life. So he runs back, he opens up the door, and he starts apologizing. "Sorry, we forgot about you." He tells him the whole story. And he says, "Gamzu etova." He says, "Gamzu etova for me, but why was it gamzu etova for you? You're in dungeon for 5 years." He says, "Because if not, I would have been with you, and I have a thumb." So, and then they made a l'chaim afterwards, and they all lived happily ever after. So that gives us an opportunity. Let's discuss l'chaim for a little bit. Many people know how to make l'chaims, and that's the greatest of l'chaims. You're not limited to one, two, or three a day. Many of you have already made one, maybe two or three, and many of you are about to make one. So let's go over the next couple of minutes. What's the basis behind l'chaim? There's a universal custom, a Jewish custom. Before we have schnapps, a drink, even kiddush, as we'll see, people say l'chaim. What's that all about? So, some suggest that we saw on the TV and the movies, when people were drinking, they used to bang their glasses together before they drank. They used to go make a toast and bang. What's the banging of the glasses? The banging of the glasses was that's back in the day. Maybe it's still happening today, I don't know. That they used to kill your enemy. You used to put poison into the drink, and then you used to bang it. So therefore, just in case someone poisoned your drink, if he knew about it, he'd go into his drink, and therefore you say, "L'chaim, I'm drinking this drink, l'chaim elolamavis, for life, and I'm not drinking poison." That's how some bring down. Others bring down, as we mentioned a couple of days ago, when we were discussing when science and Torah collide, does Jewish law change? So one of the topics we discussed was the prohibition of having fish and meat together. fish and meat, the Gemara has very strong words about the danger. It's a davar acher, it will lead to something so terrible we can't even tell you what it is. Rashi tells it's leprosy, and we pointed out that it's a whole discussion today whether it applies bizman hazeh. The machokas shach and taz in general, whether the laws of fish and meat are more lenient or stricter than milk and meat. On one hand, it's only a minig, so we could be more lenient. On the other hand, according to the Taz, it's a sakana chamira sakanta meisura. But more strict when it comes to danger, when it comes to prohibitions. And then there was a whole issue with the worth of the sauce that fish in it. So the way Rav Schachter says it over is that, it's his opinion was that there's no need. If it's less than 60, number one, it's a machloka shach and taz, if there's less than 60 times fish. And maybe we pass like the Magen Avraham, there's no danger. So therefore he was okay with not putting OU fish. But the system, I'm not sure, it might have been changed by now. We could find out. But either way, even though the Magen Avraham writes, there's no danger today, but we did not Gemara anyway. And that's the Minhag Yisrael today. We don't have fish and meat together. So, and the Gemara only talks about cooking fish and meat. Today we have a machmir and a little residue, as Rav Schachter always likes saying, that people are so machmir not to, because it's a suffix sakana, you might come to use the same fork with the fish, yet you're having triples of cholin, kishka, everything that kills you is still having. But that's the way people are. Like one of the friends I know as well, he used to tell me that there's a family minhag goes back, I think it's a Shla Hurwitz, that not to have turkey. It's a whole discussion whether we can eat turkey or not, whether you have a Masorah. So he writes, this family has the minhag of not eating turkey, so, but yeah, some people in his family, they'll eat chazer, they'll eat treif on Yom Kippur, but they won't eat turkey. So too, people are so machped on the residue, and sometimes you got to look at big picture. You should still be machmir on it if you want to be, but if you're concerned about health, then you should be eating more healthy as well. But either way, so since what do we do when we have fish and meat together? So we want to break it up. Besides washing off the forks, so we have a l'chaim, we wash our hands, we have a little cracker, we have some challah in between, or matzah, and therefore we say, we make a l'chaim, we're saying l'chaim, we're separating fish and meat. So we're doing this l'chaim, eating fish and meat can lead l'mavas, to death. And therefore, that's the second reason for the minhag of l'chaim between fish and meat. A third explanation is, we know there's a minhag among some Sfardim that they scream out, especially the Shabbos morning, Kiddush before Bo'ri Pri HaGafen, and they scream out l'chaim. What's the connection, l'chaim, with the Kiddush? So we know that the death came to the world so that because Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, from the tree of knowledge. And we know there's a whole discussion, what was the tree? It definitely wasn't an apple, but some say it was an esrog, and that's why the minhag of a woman, pregnant woman, eating from the esrog tree after Sukkot, they're showing, look, I'm not like Chava, take it easy on the childbirth. However, that's what some points out here, that since it's from, one opinion is from vines, from grapes, so therefore we're drinking it l'chaim, we're making a bar b'yagafen to life, a kiddush, v'lo l'mavus. Or a fourth explanation is that when the Gemara tells us in the sixth perek in Sanhedrin, when people are going out for nigmar hadin, for capital punishment, so we know we have to kill the person right away. We don't want them, the mental anguish of them, like this, sitting around waiting for another being on death row. And then even when we take them there, we give them little spices, a little drink in order to buffer it. Not that then don't know what's going on anymore, then there'd be no point. We want them to do tshuva, but to try to take away the mental anguish. Because Torah is very concerned not only with physical pain but with psychological pain. In fact, that's why I remember when I went to Alcatraz, only as a visitor, as part of the tour. And I remember one of the tours, that we did, I guess there was Walkmans then, that's before, but now I'm sure they all have iPods, and they're discussing what's the worst part of Alcatraz, you expect because of the way they treated the criminals and etc. But one person, you know what, on a nice sunny day, you could see the shore on by San Francisco. And since you can see the shore in San Francisco, imagine you see these people running, having a great time, and I'm stuck in this hole. And therefore, that's what, so over here, the contrast, when we drink l'chaim. When he was drinking, we say l'chaim v'lo l'maves, and the last one they explain is Chazal tell us there's an onein is someone who loses a relative before the death, so they're usher to have bus of yayin. But Avel, when the Chazal tell us, one of the purposes of Yayin was to Nachem Avelim, to comfort the mourner. So therefore, they drink it. We're in a mourner's house, so we say L'chaim, we want to drink it for a Simcha, V'lo L'mavis, and not because we're in Avel. So those are different schools of thought to have in mind when you make your next L'chaim. Whether it's with the glasses, the fish and the meat, the l'chaim, the eitz hadas, the meat that's based in, or nachem aveilim, we see the minhag of the chasim sofer said you should say l'chaim tova m'sholom. You don't say l'chaim because that's gematria minhag. That's osios gehenim. L'chaim tovim is gematria kola. L'chaim tovim sholom, one should say. And of course, there's an old minhag of the whole discussion by Yortzai, fast or feast. So, the straight psak in Shulchan Aruch is fast. The other is, the minhag among the Hasidim is to make a tikkun. And therefore, even though there's no source, the Minchas Yitzchak writes, but he says it's a holy custom, and therefore, what's the purpose behind it? It's a schus to the nifter, because you get a chance, people make brachas, and people making brachas, and as well, you like Avraham Avinu, you're giving the people a tikkun, a breakfast, some cake. So of course, one could do both. One could make a tikkun in shul and fast themselves, or as Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, the original minhag developed like Erev Pesach. First to make a siyum, and then you eat, because it's only a minhag, so therefore you make a siyum, you could eat. Of course, they dropped the siyum, and it left the kiddush. And this to conclude, as always, whichever the five reasons, it's all l'chaim v'lo l'mavis. As always in Judaism, it's the power of contrast. That to fully appreciate anything, we have to know the other side. That's what we do the night of Pesach. Matchil beganus v'siyam mishvach. We begin with the shame of the Jewish people and end with the praise. Let's just get to the good stuff. Why am I spending my good portion of my Haggadah reading about how terrible it was for the Jews in Egypt? Avadim ayinu mitchilat ovdei avodah zarah. Let's just get to the freedom. Let's celebrate tonight. And of course the answer is, we can't fully appreciate what freedom is until we know what slavery is. As much as I appreciate eyesight, but someone who doesn't have the ability to see, and now they can see, or someone doesn't have the ability to walk, and now they can walk, that's a totally different experiential. And that's why, as well, we say l'chaim. We say l'chaim in contrast, below l'mavis, just like we did in Tfilas Hatal, and that's what, and that's the cuckoo. That's how Rav Soloveitchik explained. That's why we know coming up in a couple of weeks there's Yom Ha'atzma'ut for those who celebrate Israel Independence Day, and the night before is Yom HaZikaron, it's the day of remembered the soldiers passed away, and not only the soldiers, but all the people who were Moser Nefesh, the Eretz Israel. So the question is why it seems like a big contrast. We're going from Yom HaZikaron to going to Yom HaZman. The Rebbe explained that's the power of Kaddish, that's what the chief rabbi didn't have in mind. To fully appreciate the gift of Eretz Israel, you have to know what people sacrificed and gave up, and that's what it's all about. And that's over here. It's Chayim, the low Lamaves. One should have drinks, they should drink in times of Simcha.